We're into the second half of the program. Thanks for joining us. Many of you have the correct answer. Many more do not. We will give you another clue this segment to help you along the way, to help you qualify and get randomly selected, hopefully for you, for an Upper Deck starter kit. It's Scott Rentoul. It's Jamie Dodd in for Karen Sermon, who hopefully rejoins the program tomorrow, taking a little midweek hiatus from the show. Jamie, we led with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and the Toronto Blue Jays today. Not because we were going to talk Blue Jays in depth, but he was the story for a lot of people in sports last night. He just had one of those nights. The same way Tatis Jr. had one of those nights on the weekend. The same way Connor McDavid had one of those nights the other night. And we used it as a catalyst into a conversation about guys who you thought were going to be instantaneous success in their respective leagues, but they weren't, and they had promise, and maybe you tapped out on some of them and you came back. But Vladimir Guerrero Jr. feels like he's finally hit. 1 month does not a career make. It just felt like that moment encapsulated where he can get to and what this month might represent in hopefully what is a long and fruitful career.
And the thing that makes it feel a little bit more real is, you know, we saw this at the minor league levels, right? This is what it was supposed to look like for Vladdy. This was always his potential. So it feels less like he's getting lucky. I mean, obviously it's a hot streak. Everyone has hot streaks, but it doesn't feel like luck or a fluke as much as it feels like him realizing the potential that we always knew was there.
There are these weird roller coasters that fans sometimes go on. And I don't think very many were out on Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And the conversation we want you in on is, who are those prospects that you were super excited about when you found out about them or your team drafted them and they didn't hit right away? Maybe they didn't play right away, or they took longer to develop at a minor league level if it happens to be in a sport like hockey or baseball. Eventually they got to where they were supposed to and you went, oh yeah, that's what all the hype was about. Jamie, there's this part of the arc where a player is criticized so much and he's under so much scrutiny that whether you are a fan of the player or not, you almost jump on board because you just don't want it to be a situation where nothing good ever happens to that guy. You know what I'm talking about? Where people are writing the guy off as a bust early in his career and you go, well, look, I don't even cheer for that team and I wouldn't even consider myself a fan of that particular player, but now I just want it to work out so all of these critics can shut their mouths for a while.
The one that I get, it's similar. It's not quite the same, but it's similar, is when a player gets the choker label. And it happens so often. It often happens early in a player's career, and everyone just piles on them constantly. I always end up rooting for that player to win the big one and shed that choker label. Like I became drawn to Peyton Manning for that reason, right? Everyone, such harsh criticism that he couldn't win the big one, then he finally did. It was good to see. But that's one that's always stuck with me as well. Like, I just feel this instinct when everyone has decided that a player is a choker, I end up rooting for that guy to get it done.
Like Phil Kessel went through that. Phil Kessel went through that, yep, in Toronto, eventually gets to Pittsburgh. Okay, maybe he's not your first line prime time in the spotlight guy for a team that wins. But when people start labeling him as a guy you can't win with, I think a lot of people decided to cheer for Phil Kessel, and it didn't hurt that he was leaving the Maple Leafs and people wanted it to work out for the place he went to as opposed to the Leafs themselves. Like, that didn't hurt the conversation. Do you feel that way about Taylor Hall right now?
Well, a little bit, and that's going to tie into my take the L here. But yeah, it is, not that I'm a massive Taylor Hall fan or anything, but it's nice to see a guy who had really, really struggled the last couple of years finally get back to a certain level of performance.
Yeah, Take the L is coming your way this segment. You can send your submissions in right now, 960, 960, or 650, 650. We've mentioned a number of players who don't fit the Taylor Hall category necessarily, but the Sedins, you gave the example off the top of the show. That was an excellent one. And we've gotten into other players who've needed to go to other situations for their potential to be realized. I don't know if Flames fans are not, like, if they're watching that right now and going, oh, God, really? It's going to happen here with Sam Bennett in Florida? I think most people realized it wasn't going to happen in Calgary, but you do get that part of the fan base, Jamie, whether it's Calgary, whether it's Vancouver with Cam Neely. Like, it's been the fear with Jake Virtanen for years, and I think, yep, people have finally moved past the point of that, and they don't think it's going to happen wherever Jake Virtanen ends up. But you get that part of the fan base that worries about it for so long, and then you get another part that goes, look, it was never going to happen here, so why would I wish anything ill on that player? Hopefully he goes somewhere else and figures it out, and I suppose hopefully it doesn't cost us terribly in the end.
Yeah, and as I said earlier in the show, right, Calgary got a very nice return back for Sam Bennett, and certainly if either the pick or the prospect they got turns into something helpful, that will help a lot. But I've seen a couple texts already to our Calgary inbox, 960-960, Scotty, saying, you know what? I'm happy for Sam Bennett. It wasn't going to happen here. Good for him for finding some success in Florida.
Yeah, and if you're on the other side of that, like, give your head a shake. It was not going to happen in Calgary. It really wasn't going to happen in Calgary. He just wasn't going to be given the same opportunity. And yes, he might have moved up Daryl Sutter's lineup, but does he have the same type of surrounding talent? He's gone to a place where there's not as much scrutiny. He's been placed on a really talented line with Anthony Duclair and Jonathan Huberdeau. And I heard this mentioned the other day when Darren Millard had him on the Chirp. Like, one of the conversation points they had was it must be somewhat re-energizing and almost refreshing, Jamie, that after playing in a division where you're seeing the Oilers and the Canucks and the Senators time and time again, he goes to a new team that he's got to fit in with, but he's also seeing new competition. Like, mentally, that's got to be a little bit refreshing as well.
Yeah, it's got to freshen things up for you for sure. And even as I was saying that, Scotty, we had this text in. I don't think Sam Bennett will ever be like that for the Flames. I love the Flames. I love Sam Bennett. I'm glad he's doing well with the Panthers. I hope he can sustain it. He deserves it. So already you're seeing there's not that same kind of, not animosity towards the player, but just animosity towards the entire situation that a guy has gone somewhere else and immediately had success.
Steve in the East says, that's how I feel about Vertanen in Vancouver. I just want him to succeed. And Steve, I think, is alluding to the fact, like, go wherever. Doesn't look like it's ever going to happen in Vancouver, so go wherever, and hopefully it becomes a little bit better for you. I mentioned a couple of guys, or at least I teased a couple of players. They're both from the NFL, Jamie, and I'll give you the first one, the roller coaster. I've never seen a roller coaster on a player over the first part of his career like I've seen with Jared Goff. And I think we kind of know what Jared Goff is now, but he went from terrible first overall pick, bust, can't even play in the NFL, to, boy, were you all wrong. This guy's going to lead teams to multiple Super Bowls, back to, I don't know if you can win with him. The roller coaster that's occurred with his career this far is wild.
It is. It's a great example. Probably, I don't know, unprecedented, but you're right. As a first overall pick, who people were basically saying, I don't think this guy can be an NFL quarterback. Then you have the coaching change, and all of a sudden he's in the Super Bowl against Tom Brady and the Patriots. And then a couple years after that, they're trading him out of town because they think they can't win with him. And it is interesting because I think we're probably at the right place with Jared Goff now, maybe slightly on the negative side, but I think we have a pretty accurate picture of what he is at this point. But man, there were some ups and downs along the way.
Certainly were. So here's a guy I will ask you if you think he's a candidate to fit into the category we're most describing today. A guy who got picked really high that a lot of people at the time went, okay, I don't see what you see, but you picked him really high, so there must be something. He has not had immediate success. Daniel Jones, could he turn into something as quarterback of the New York Giants?
He could. I would not be betting on it. There's physical tools there. There's the upside. You can understand why the Giants might have bought in to what his ceiling is. I'm not betting on it. And here's the thing, Scotty, and I know we want to get into this as well. When I say I'm not betting on that happening, that's not strictly an indictment of Daniel Jones. That's also a recognition that he might not be in the best situation to develop as a quarterback, right? And we saw that with Sam Darnold with the New York Jets. He was in a terrible position to develop as a quarterback, and now Darnold's in a new position and a new environment that might be better, but you worry how much did spending the first part of his career in just a horrible, horrible spot for a quarterback, how much did that do to stunt his development? I have a little bit of the same concerns with Daniel Jones. If Daniel Jones had been drafted to a completely different team, maybe we'd be talking about him in a very different light, but as it is, with how his career's already gone, I'm not betting on him turning around and becoming, you know, a high-level starting quarterback.
They brought in some more talent. Obviously, they need a healthy Saquon Barkley to make that offense go as well. They went out and got Kenny Golladay. The Giants were a team that was much better last season than people expected it to be. It wasn't all because of Daniel Jones. He's flashed at times. He's an interesting case for me. I think he's already forgotten because we turn over these quarterback classes so quickly, and we always are looking at the next one and who's going to hit and who's the number one overall pick. I don't mind his situation overall this year from an expectation point of view, Jamie.
Yep, low expectations for sure, 100%, and that will help. I just look at, I know they brought in the talent. But I just look at, I mean, I don't have a lot of confidence in Dave Gettleman. That I'll just throw it out there, right? And he's the guy steering the ship there for the Giants. So I'm not sure they're ever going to be able to put the infrastructure around Daniel Jones to really give him a shot.
There are a lot of different branches to this conversation, and we've hit on a number of them, and some of you are weighing in. I'll get in this one from Rick in Richmond. We had Mitch in Victoria say early, hey, what about the opposite? What about those prospects who hit right away? They look like they are the next coming. And then that ends up being the most productive time of their careers. Tyler Myers and Dion Phaneuf were the two players who were rolled out as examples of that. Rick in Richmond has weighed in on that as well, and he's going into the Wayback Machine. And for older hockey fans like myself, you'll remember this guy. Rick says Joe Juno was a guy like that. 102 points in his first year, 85 in his second, and then not over 64 points a year the rest of his career. That's a pretty good example. Like, Joe Juno was a good NHL player, a very good NHL player, but he wasn't what he showed early on.
That's a great pull. And just think of that, 102 points. I know it was a different time in terms of scoring, but still 102 points in your rookie season. And then just to really fall off a cliff after that and never be that kind of productive player again, that's a steep, steep decline.
Yeah, it certainly is. If you have other examples, you can get them in here. We've thrown some out there, and sometimes it's a change of situation case like a Sam Bennett. Ryan Tannehill's the example I've used from football. Sometimes it's a little bit of a late bloomer and went through a whole bunch of criticism. I don't know that there's a better example of that given the market, the intensity, than the Sedins that you put out there earlier in the show. And we'll get to this. You know what? Why don't we get to it here after we give away the next clue, Jamie, because we got Take the L. I'll save it for Take the L because there are people I'd like to be taking the L today that aren't, but I'll mention them once we get to the segment. Let's give our listeners another clue. This is the clue that if you don't have it already, it should give away who the player is. And if you haven't been following along, we've given out a couple of clues already for the Upper Deck starter kit. We're giving away one in Vancouver at $650, $650, one in Calgary at $960, $960. All you need to do to qualify is have the right answer. All right, Jamie. What is the next clue of the active mystery player we are looking for in the National Hockey League?
Clue number three. He is one of only eight NHL players to wear the number 63 this season.
That's a pretty distinct number.
One of only eight NHL players to wear the number 63. Yeah, very distinct number.
Not a lot of guys wear number 63. Fewer of them would qualify as two-time World Junior gold medalists. Fewer of them... In fact, only one of them is the leading goal scorer in the National Hockey League for the month of April. This player has more goals in April than any other player in the National Hockey League. If you know that, text in to 650-650-960-960. You could win, and we'll announce this by the end of the show, a trading card binder from Upper Deck that holds up to 252 cards, three packs of Upper Deck Series 1 cards, an exclusive Sophomore Sensations card, one poster, one trading card collector's guide. If you still don't have it, we will give you one more clue in the final hour of the program today. Let's get to Take the L, Greg. We had McAuliffe on earlier, and we talked about chuckles per 60. I chuckle every time I hear that intro, and we've been doing this show for a while, Jamie. I still chuckle when I hear that intro.
I'm glad you enjoy it. It's pretty good.
I really do. I will cede my opportunity at the top of Take the L for you, Jamie. Who needs to take the L today?
So I feel a little bit bad here piling on because they have just had such a miserable season. And we've already talked about this when the trade happened, but the Buffalo Sabres and general manager Kevin Adams, they got to step up and take another L for the Taylor Hall trade. We all knew this was a possibility, right? When Taylor Hall left the most dismal situation in the NHL, Buffalo, to go to Boston, that there was a decent chance his season would dramatically turn around. He's been great. He's been fantastic for the Bruins. They needed a shot in the arm in their offense. He's been that. 4 goals, 3 assists in 9 games. Scored another fantastic one last night. And again, look, I get it. I'm piling on a little bit here. We've dissected the reasons maybe why they weren't able to get a better return for Taylor Hall. But only getting that second round pick, man, it looks even worse now than it did on deadline day with the way that Taylor Hall is playing, with the way that he is helping the Boston Bruins right now. So it's been a brutal season on the ice, and it's been a brutal season from a front office perspective as well. The Buffalo Sabres, because of the Taylor Hall deal, yeah, you got to step up again and take the L on this one.
You're not going to roll in the Anders Bjork stats and say, hey, he's played pretty well for the Sabres. Maybe the return was better than expected.
No, sorry. Canceled out by Taylor Hall.
Fair enough. And it's a tough lesson for Kevin Adams to learn that sometimes the best offer comes along earlier in the process. And when Lou Lamoriello pulled the rug out and said, okay, you don't like our deal, that's the deal that the New Jersey Devils are going to get instead. They got it in the Palmieri-Zajac deal. Kevin Adams turned it down, wasn't able to get a first-round pick or anything better back in the package for Taylor Hall. That's a good one. I'll tell you who I'd like to take the L today, Jamie. I would like a lot of draft analysts, a lot of prospect gurus in the National Football League to take an L. Like, I would love it if the day before the draft every year, there were people who are actually accountable in that sense and stood up and went, you know what? I was really hard on that pick. I thought these guys made a massive mistake 3 years ago. Turns out they didn't. They selected the proper player there. I'll give you an example of that. Patrick Mahomes. When Kansas City moved up the board to take Patrick Mahomes, there were articles written immediately. I can't believe they gave up that much draft capital. What are they doing? Yeah, he's got some talent, but he's largely unproven at the college level. Look at his one-loss record. He's made some errors. They've already got Alex Smith. Why would they give up this much capital? A lot of articles were written like that. I didn't hear a lot of people put up their hand afterward and go, you know, I was one of the guys who said that was a bad idea. Turns out that was pretty good. Like, I've seen articles written in recent days. Is Patrick Mahomes, the trade up to take that pick, is that the best trade in NFL history? But I don't hear a lot of accountability from those who carved it, Jamie.
And the funny thing is, like, I understand, you know, we're in the take business, the opinion business, right, Scotty? And I understand why people are worried that if they start admitting mistakes, people aren't going to listen to them or people are going to write them off. And, ah, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about. He got this wrong or he got that wrong. But I think it's actually the opposite, right? Like, I want to listen to somebody who can stand up and say, I got this wrong and here's why. Here is what led me to the wrong conclusion and here's how I'm going to apply it going forward, especially in something like the draft. And the thing is, okay, you get a draft pick wrong. Well, guess what? So does every NFL team. So does every NHL team. Everyone evaluates draft prospects incorrectly sometimes. That's not embarrassing. It's a learning opportunity. And I know as somebody who's looking for draft experts to follow, to learn from, I appreciate that. Like, I think that enhances your credibility and enhances your reputation. It's not embarrassing to stand up and admit a mistake.
No, what do we hear every time this year? Hey, just so you know, I'm the guy who got this right 5 years ago. I was the guy who was high on this player who fell to the second round. We hear that NHL draft all the time. I said that teams should have taken him in the first. He went in the third. I was right. They forget about the, you know, 64 picks in between and missing on a bunch of those. I would like accountability there. I can't assign an L to anyone in particular on that today. I would just like to see it. Someone said to me earlier this week, maybe you need to take an L on the Oilers. I actually took an L on the Oilers a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
So I stood up and I said, I was wrong on that. Jamie, you look very good in that category as you picked the Oilers as a team in the West that was definitely going to make the playoffs. Here's who needs to take the L today, though. And we already had text in from Matt and Cochran referencing this. I do kind of feel bad for whoever this person is, but this is more for the entire crew. TNT's NBA postgame show last night, you did what it would expect. It brought attention to the new partner that is coming on board, and that is the National Hockey League. And so after the basketball game on TNT, there's the panel, there's Shaq, and they've got the graphic up there announcing the NHL deal. The graphic was incredible. On the left side of the screen, here's what it reads. The National Hockey League and Turner Sports, 3 Stanley Cup finals on TNT, rights to every Winter Classic, live streaming on HBO Max. On the right side of the screen, 2 players. Both captains of their respective NHL teams, the Capitals and the Oilers. You know who those guys are, right, Jamie?
I sure do. Yeah. I don't know if the producers at TNT know.
They got Alexander Ovechkin right, but the other captain who is there wearing his Oilers sweater, front and center, Andrew Ferentz. They got the graphic wrong. Now, they didn't say, hey, that's Connor McDavid. Nobody said that explicitly in the script, but we all know who they were looking for. And turns out, Jamie, that one of the things that happens when you search Connor McDavid captain in Google and you go image search is it brings up an image of when Connor McDavid was awarded the captaincy in Edmonton. And that image is of a former captain, of course, a guy that Connor McDavid was taken over for in Edmonton. So Andrew Ferentz made a lengthy appearance on the graphic on TNT. but this just isn't on the graphics person and whoever it was that searched it out. Like, that had to go through a bunch of checks and balances before it went to air, and nobody there knew that that was not Connor McDavid, the player that they were trying to promote.
And you know what, Scotty? Fortunately for them, a lot of their viewers probably didn't realize it either on that side of the border. We realized it up here, but probably didn't raise that many eyebrows down south.
So the crew has to take an L, but here's what we love about the fact this has gone to Turner, about the fact that it's gone to TNT. They have fun with this stuff. If you don't believe me, have a listen to Shaq last night as he was asked about the NHL right after the graphic was on the screen.
Shaq, how is your NHL knowledge?
I don't have any.
Can you name three NHL teams?
New Jersey Devils, California Kings, LA Kings.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, don't play.
You can't get the whole state.
LA Kings and the...
Chicago...
Bruins. Blackhawks.
Nice. Very proud of Shaq.
See, that's why the panel's so good, Jamie. They're not afraid to laugh at themselves and take a few chances. And for a lot of people, I don't want to be embarrassed on air. That panel never takes it that way.
And I got to say, shout out to Candace Parker for, you know, she's been kind of a breakout star on that TNT panel this season. And she's got a little NHL knowledge there. She's coaching Shaq through it, right? Feeding him the answers almost. I was impressed by that.
Yeah, Candace Parker's been great on that panel, hasn't she?
She's been fantastic.
Yeah, and she's gone at it with Shaq on a couple of analyst questions, breaking down plays, strategy questions. She's been really good on that. You know who else has been really good as an analyst on air? Our next guest. She's also a very proud member of our national team, and she's a member of the PWHPA. Sarah Nurse joins us next on Rintoul and Man with Jamie Dodd. I didn't know that was the song coming back and the lyrics that we're going to play. No one's rooting for me. I'm the other man. So take the segue as you will into the segment. I'm Scott Rintoul, Jamie Dodd. We will soon be joined by Sarah Nurse in just a couple minutes. I was going to lead in, and I still will, Jamie, with the news that a former Calgary Flames head coach is a champion. And Canucks fans will look at this guy and have an immediate visceral reaction. He, of course, is Bob Hartley, who is now a champion in the KHL. He has now won titles in the National Hockey League with the Stanley Cup. He's got himself a Calder Cup. He won a Swiss title, Quebec Major Junior Hockey League title. And now he has a KHL title. Avant-Garde Omsk Gagarin Cup champs.
Congratulations to them. And it's funny because despite that resume you just laid out, it doesn't feel like we're going to see Bob Hartley back in the NHL anytime soon.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. Although the thought of Torts going to Russia after this season in Columbus and fighting Bob Hartley and like finally squaring off, like that would feel like the perfect landscape for that fight, wouldn't it?
It really, really would. Maybe that's where the old generation of coaches, like maybe Mike Babcock will go over to the KHL, right? It'll just be the hard-ass coach league soon.
Well, Bill Peters is there for a completely different reason. But if Torts went there, if he went, okay, it's not working out in Columbus, we both agree that the time has passed. You guys need a new beginning. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm finally going to have that fight with Hartley. That's what's left on my bucket list. Like, I tried to get there one night. I still don't like the guy, and I'm going to make it happen. Like, does that feel like Torts would just roll up on some sort of frozen tundra snowscape, pull his shirt off, and dare Hartley to fight him right there in that environment?
It feels like a professional wrestling storyline, you know, yeah. You have to like follow your rival to the next promotion, to the next town over so you can beat him up again or try to beat him up again.
A little closer to home. We'll get into notes and quotes in the next hour. Approximately an hour from now, we get you up to speed on what's happening in the National Hockey League coming up on the slate. Vancouver plays a very early game today for folks who are listening on the West Coast, 2:30. That's when the Canucks take to the ice Pacific time. It's a 5:30 puck drop in Ottawa. Thatcher Demko expected to dress. Don't have word yet on whether he's starting, but he's expected to start either tonight or tomorrow out east against the Senators or the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll see where they decide to get him back into the lineup. There's going to be a debut on the West Coast that will bear some watching, and it's one of the games. There's seven games tonight, Jamie, and this game means virtually nothing except in the lottery standings. The LA Kings are going to have the number two overall pick in the draft debut tonight.
Yeah, that's an exciting one. Quinton Byfield, of course, who's had a really, really strong campaign in the AHL as a very young player. I know a lot of people, a lot of prospects, watchers, obviously high on him and went number two overall. That's an exciting debut to pay attention to.
Yeah, the Kings stayed in that race for a very long time, and it's, hey, who can finish fourth in this division? Because it's very top-heavy, and Minnesota's been a really good story, but who wants to grab hold of it? LA, for probably the first half of the season, looked like, hey, why not us? Why not us? Nobody expected anything, but really, who's going to grab hold of that position? St. Louis hasn't taken it over yet, but there have been a number of teams that have kind of laid claim to that spot for a while. The Kings, the Sharks felt like they were in it for a very short period of time. Arizona's been sitting there basically like, okay, St. Louis, if you're not going to get your crap together, we'll just land here if that's okay with you. And now the Kings, because of the way things have gone in recent weeks, they're at the point where, look, it's look to the future time, and Quinton Byfield is supposed to be that.
Yeah, he sure is. And I think it's interesting, especially with the season that Alexis Lafreniere has had with the New York Rangers, which has not been exceptional to start his NHL campaign. I think there's going to be a lot of people paying attention to see if Quinton Byfield, you know, can kind of leap over Lafreniere as a prospect already, if he has a strong end of his NHL campaign. I know it's a lot different doing it at the AHL, but his pro start to his career at that level was really strong. It's going to be fascinating to see if he can carry that over.
One of the things that a lot of people said about Byfield when the draft went down last year was, look, if he hits his ceiling, he might end up being the better high-end player. It's just the gap between that ceiling and where his floor is, it's much larger than what Alexis Lafreniere is going to end up being. You're right. It hasn't been a terribly productive rookie campaign. I'm not sure exactly how they view it in New York with the first overall pick in the draft and a guy who was ready to play in the NHL, was going to play with all of that talent in New York. He's also playing in the weirdest schedule we've ever seen and in the toughest division that exists in the National Hockey League. I wonder how much both of those are mitigating factors in his rookie season.
Well, you've got to think, certainly internally for the Rangers, that not that they're making excuses, but you have to take that into account. Like, just such a weird time for a rookie to come into the league, you know, probably not able to establish the same relationships on the team with older players, with the coaching staff, a really, really difficult situation. And look, of course, that doesn't mean every rookie has struggled. Of course not in the NHL, but it's going to affect everyone differently. And I do think you have to give a player like Alexis Lafreniere a little bit extra rope because it's just such a tough season.
Well, this is going to be one of the real questions that general managers, management teams, owners, I guess, to a certain extent, as they evaluate those underneath them, have to look at this year. And how much do you throw out because of the abnormality of what this NHL season has been and only playing against your division and compact schedules that have been affected in many cases by COVID? And that's on both sides of things, Jamie. Like, there are players that have had great years that we didn't expect to, that you weigh and go, okay, how much is that a product of the environment this year, or is it a sign of things to come? And obviously on the other end as well, there have been a bunch of players who've fallen short of expectation. How much of that is, we can't even use this as comparison. It's a really difficult question to answer, whether you're talking rookie, guy at the tail end of his career, guy in the midst of his career.
Oh, it's an incredibly difficult conversation, right? And for the teams that are trying to build their rosters for next year, like, what level of performance can you count on from players? That question, it's always difficult to answer, right? Because performance can vary so much, and there's unexpected leaps in development and unexpected declines in talent level or in production level. But I think after this year in particular, how much stock do you put into a given situation? And how much weight, you know, if you know one player is having a really tough time because he's separated from his family, or for whatever reason, the protocols are hitting him harder than other players, like, how much do you factor that in? Those are incredibly difficult questions to answer.
That's a good point you raise. Jonathan Drouin has taken leave of the Montreal Canadiens for personal reasons today. I'm certainly not going to sit here and speculate as to why. I don't think it's responsible for any of us to do so, but there have been very unique challenges, and we've heard the likes of Robin Lehner come to the podium and explain what theirs have been. I don't know what it is with Drouin, but not just the physical rigors that people have gone through, but the mental rigors that they've gone through this year. And man, how many times have we talked about that with rookies in this league who are from outside North America, living on their own for the first time? I mean, even a guy like Lafreniere, who's moving to New York and now isn't going to hang out with his teammates in the same way that he was before. I know things are a little more relaxed in the United States than they are here in Canada. But you look at some of the European players, for example. Nils Höglander has been pointed out in Vancouver, Jamie, is, okay, by the way, as you adjust to a new culture, a new team, a brand new league, which is the best in the world, do so on your own. Like, go sit in a hotel room when you
yep.
have free time because you're not really allowed to do anything else.
Well, and how often do we hear, not just in the NHL, Scotty, but across sports, stories about rookies who are basically paired up with a mentor on the team, right? With a veteran player, and whether it's move in with him and his family, or just you're rooming with him, or you're riding on the bus and the plane with him all the time. It's like the buddy system or a big brother system, right? And you are the rookie is stapled to that veteran and just given a chance to soak up everything they know, see how they go about their business and learn from them. You know, you can still do a little bit of that, but as you said, the opportunities to really socialize, to bond, to get to know players, to have those spontaneous conversations away from the rink, those don't really exist this year. And it's such a big jump going from junior to the NHL right away. Like, you got to think most players need to have some sort of mentorship like that. It's just difficult to do in this environment.
You are welcome to weigh in on any of that throughout the course of the show. 960, 960, or 650, 650. We await the presence of Sarah Nurse. Hopefully we can get her on. If not, we will reschedule for another day. Slated to join us this segment. We haven't been able to make that connection as of yet. Jamie, you know, we just did take the L, and sometimes we get some good submissions rolling in both of our text message inboxes. Matt and Cochran was the guy that I referenced. I brought up what happened last night on TNT, and they had to take the L. Like, I'm sorry. Yeah, feel bad for whoever did the Google search, but you got to take an L. You got to own that one. Matt and Cochran brought that one up. There are some suggesting, and some of those are people who know the answer to the Upper Deck starter kit giveaway question of the day, the active player. They're suggesting you and I should take the L for the player that was chosen today. I will take the L on that if you want me to. I chose the player. I absolve you of any blame, Jamie.
Well, and I will say that's kind of a clue as well for people out there. You know, think of a player that fans in one market in particular might not want to think about, might not be pleased that we brought him up and brought him to the forefront of their minds today.
But here's one of the great things about it, Jamie. As this player's name continues to roll in the text message inbox, as people have taken the last two clues and have been able to unlock the puzzle that we put out there at the beginning of the show, and they have now qualified because they have the right answer, it's really a test in how bad do you want to win this contest. Because based on the disdain that's coming in on some of these texts, like, it's very difficult for people to type these two words.
Yeah, exactly, right? It's like physically uncomfortable to write it in at some level. And that, it's, again, I don't want to give too much away, but it's been a while since this player has really earned the ire of these fans. So it's fascinating.
Well, it's a conversation that perhaps we will have after we reveal the answer in the final hour of the program today. I don't know that this player gets any credit for changing his stripes to a certain degree. I'm not saying you have to. It's one of the things that I think is great about sports. You can just be someone who is down on a player forever. You know, we talked earlier in the program, and McAuliffe alluded to this. I was going to talk more about it, but we only have so much time with Tim every single week, and we want to hit so many different topics. He alluded to it with Trevor Bauer. Like, there are very few players out there, Jamie, that I can think of where I didn't want to hear anything from them, and now I am eager to hear from them in the same way I am from Trevor Bauer. I don't consider myself the biggest Trevor Bauer fan. Hey, I really hope great things happen for you. I hope you win the Cy Young. I hope somebody pays you all the money. But when he speaks, I want to listen because I've learned things and I've gained a lot more insight into not only him, but what's going on in Major League Baseball with the way that he's opened up and revealed a different side of his personality in the last couple of years.
I feel like with Trevor Bauer, I still kind of, it's almost like two separate silos that I have to keep with Trevor Bauer. You know, there's the parts I appreciate and respect, which he has developed more in recent years, and we heard it again on the weekend, but I haven't done a complete 180, you know what I mean? Where I'm all aboard for Trevor Bauer, right? Like, that's not where I'm at with him. I just, okay, there's this one part of it that I like, that I respect, but I'm still very cognizant of the other sides of it too.
Yeah, for sure. And again, this Trevor Bauer points to the fact that you can appreciate something in one part of the conversation, like in certain contexts, like you said, in that silo, Jamie. Like, if Trevor Bauer's talking about baseball, got time for it. Outside of that, hey, you don't have to think he's a great person. You don't have to align with his political beliefs. Some of you do, some of you don't. But within the context of his sport, there's something to be gained there. I didn't think that I would say that 4 or 5 years ago.
No, certainly not. And that is a big difference. Just as you said, over the past 4 or 5 years that he has developed that side of his personality, but you still do. There's almost not a regret, but every time he does make a good point, you still kind of shake your head and like, wow, I'm a little bit surprised still. I know he's done it before, but just given everything else I know about him, I'm still a little surprised he's made a good point.
I'm not surprised that so many people are texting in right now. And again, qualify yourself. We want to have more people to choose from when we randomly select a winner for the Upper Deck starter kit each day. The number of people who said, I haven't heard any clues yet. I've missed the clues, but I know who it is. There's so many people who have qualified just based on the description you and I gave the player for the Upper Deck starter kit. Clues again, 960, 960, or 650, 650. We started the show talking about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and used that as a catalyst for getting into a conversation about players that maybe you over-scrutinized, you over-criticized, you never thought were going to hit after you had a whole bunch of hype early on. And we said it was a really big day in the state of Florida, sports-wise. I think that's where it starts yesterday. It starts with Vladdy's performance. It starts with the conversation that comes off it. We talk about the roller coaster with certain players. How about yesterday, if you happen to be a Blue Jays fan, and listen, I know not all of you are, but one of the things people were looking forward to yesterday is what is supposed to now happen today. That's the debut of George Springer. We talked about it briefly on the show yesterday, Jamie, the prized free agent acquisition. Okay, he's finally going to play. He's over the injury. He's good enough. And then wah, wah, his quad isn't 100% yesterday. He's not playing. And I think Blue Jays fans actually entered that contest yesterday with like a disappointing vibe around them. And then Vladdy turns that around completely.
Disappointing vibe, and then they were down in that game, right? They're down 3-0 against Max Scherzer, and I know I was kind of, this is probably not going to be their night. Vladdy changes that with one swing of the bat, right? And all of a sudden, they're up, and then he just keeps piling it on after that.
Man, he's one of those guys that when he hits the ball in the type of groove he's in right now, like, you know it's gone. It's not, oh, I hope that gets over the fence. Like, he crushed those pitches last night.
Oh, man, it is... And the sound of it coming off the bat, right? And just the smoothness of the swing and the trajectory and everything. They are beautiful to watch.
We're going to talk hockey a lot more next hour, but the other things that were happening with Florida teams, though neither game was actually in Florida, the Lightning won, the Panthers won, and they've both been doing a lot of that this season. They're separated by just a point in the standings right now. Tampa Bay has a couple of games in hand. They both won by the exact same score, 7-4, just handing out goals like nothing in Chicago and Nashville last night. Both those teams qualify for the playoffs, and they raise an interesting part of the NHL discussion. Jamie, if you had to put your money on one team right now to win the Stanley Cup, and I don't think it's very clear who the favorite is because it's a different context to the conversation that we've had in recent years with the divisional format and only playing the divisional team so far this year, is there a team you would put it on ahead of Tampa Bay?
Colorado, I think, would be the team because I think they've reached the highest level of any team this year, right? When they went on that just incredible streak where they were blowing teams out and embarrassing them on the shot counter as well, like that, I think that's the highest peak that any team has had this year. Now you could flip that around and say, well, they've already hit their peak. Is that the team that you want to be betting on? But I think they will be able to get back to something close to that in the playoffs as well. So Tampa's up there for me for sure. I think I would take Colorado ahead of them.
It's so hard to compare the divisions, isn't it? It's
hard. It really is.
The only thing that is crystal clear to me is that the East is the best division, and some of that is reinforcement of our thoughts going in. We always thought it was going to be, and it's played out like that. I mean, the fight atop that division between Washington, Pittsburgh, the Islanders, and Boston, it is real, and it's really fun to watch here down the stretch. Like, the Rangers are a better team than they're probably going to get credit for this year. Unless Boston falls on its face, the Rangers are going to miss the playoffs. Philly's had a down year, but we still think relatively highly of that team overall. They've just had goaltending problems. New Jersey and Buffalo are at the bottom, but that has been a really good division overall. There's been a lot made, Jamie, about how bad the Canadian division is. Like, I've heard analysts say, it's just not a good division. There's Toronto, which is a pretty good team, but we don't even know how elite they are because the rest of the division's bad. But it is the one division where you look at the bottom and you say, that's a last place team in the North, but is Ottawa really terrible? I think they're better than the last place couple of teams in other divisions. If I look around, it's just more of a middle class division than the others.
Yeah, they're better than Anaheim. They're better than Buffalo. You know, the way Columbus has really fallen off a cliff here, you'd put them in that conversation. Detroit as well. You're right. And yeah, middle class is a great way of putting it. It is funny. You know, you talk about how difficult it is to compare divisions. And, you know, earlier in the season when we were having this debate about, okay, the Leafs are winning a bunch of games, but how good are they actually? You know, they're playing against this a fairly weak division in the North. And I saw some people make the point of, well, actually, you know, if you go by the Leafs' strength of schedule, like it's very similar to other teams. Okay, but you can't measure strength of schedule between two divisions that never play each other, right? That's not how it works. Like, yes, teams are going to win and lose a certain percentage of games, but that's not a valid tool when there's no crossover whatsoever. And that's what's going to make the playoffs so interesting, right? Is you really have no way to evaluate how good these teams are relative to each other. They have no common competition, no head-to-head matchups. It's so hard to say, and we're not going to know until the semifinals this year.
Vegas and Colorado, for example, in the West, like clearly the cream of the crop in that division. We expected them to be. That's where they are in the standings. Minnesota's been a really nice surprise. It's surprising to me that they're only 1 point back of Colorado, and the Avs do have a game in hand. But if you go look at how Vegas and Colorado and Minnesota, to a certain extent, have just beaten up on the bottom of that division, like, isn't there a discount that you have to apply to some of that maybe you're not getting in the North Division?
Yep, I think there is. I think that's totally fair. And I think if you're going to make the case against, you know, the Avalanche being Stanley Cup favorites, that's probably where you would start, right? Is that, okay, it's a two-team division and they've really had their way with a lot of the other teams. Credit to Minnesota. I mean, you shouldn't call it a two-team division, but you know what I mean. At the top, at the elite level, there's those two teams and everyone else. So yeah, you do have to factor that in. That's a legitimate argument. But at the same time, you know, Tampa Bay has been able to play Detroit, been able to play Columbus, you know, Chicago team that feisty has hung in there, but not all that impressive. They've had their opportunities to beat up on some lesser opponents too.
We've had a couple of people text in Boston, like, there's the team I put my money on. That team is going to win the Stanley Cup. This comment, that top nine mixed when their D gets healthy with Raskinek, that's a scary squad. Yeah, but how are you getting out of that division? Like, I can make that same argument for every single one of the four teams up there. The Islanders are tough every single night. The Washington Capitals are tough every single night. The Pittsburgh Penguins have probably not gotten enough run this season for how good they've been, Jamie.
I know, and you're right. It could be any of those four teams, but man, I would not want to play this Islanders team in the first round of the playoffs. Like, my goodness, going up against a Barry Trotz coach team, you know what they can do defensively. But then you also have to worry about Matt Barzal going the other way and how he can break a game open. Like, that would terrify me if my team drew the Islanders as a first round matchup.
Especially if you're Boston. Boston has not handled the Islanders very well this year right now, not slated to go against each other. There's a little bit of separation in that division. Washington and Pittsburgh have widened the gap a little bit. But that's the other thing that's going to be so fascinating about this year's tournament. And look, I'm not going to sit here and say, well, this is why Toronto's going to win the Stanley Cup. I'm certainly not going to make that case today. But if you look at some of the divisions, and if you think there are some out there that think the North is weak, for example, Jamie. Okay, well, then doesn't that actually present a better path for a team like Toronto? Some will say no, because you're not playing good enough competition along the way. But there are also going to be teams that get the hell beat out of them in the first couple of rounds. And what do you actually have left once you get to the Final Four?
And I mean, just look at not just the strength of the division, but how the style of the division, right? How the division plays. The North is very much a speed and skill division. Like, there are players here and there who can play that physical style. And I think a lot of people think, you know, if, as it looks like they're going to, Montreal makes it in, that maybe they have a chance to play more of that playoff style of hockey. But Toronto, Edmonton, Winnipeg, those are not teams that we think of as these rough and tumble teams, right, that are suited for the playoffs. So if you're the Leafs, you could go through a couple rounds without going through that kind of grinder that the teams in the East are going to go through. Or you're not going to have to be Vegas and Colorado matched up against each other in a heavyweight tilt in the second round, right? That could play not just in the Leafs' favor, that could play in the Jets or the Oilers' favor as well.
There are a lot of people that want to weigh in on this discussion, one that just kind of materialized out of nowhere. We will get Sarah Nurse on either tomorrow in a coming program, but Mike Kelly of the NHL Network joins us next. He's got a really good piece up right now, and perhaps we'll dive into this divisional evaluation as well. Next, notes and quotes, and the final clue in the Upper Deck contest still coming your way on the final hour of Rintoul and Sermon with Jamie Dodd. Scott Rintoul and Jamie Dodd with you here today. No banter off the top of this hour because Mike Kelly of the NHL Network, contributor at Sportsnet.ca, joins us right now to talk some NHL hockey. Jamie will get in on this conversation, as will Mike. Mike, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
Hey, guys, my pleasure. I'm doing well. I was listening there. I liked your chat about taking L's. That's good stuff.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Do you have anybody who you think needs to take an L right now?
Well, it sounds like you guys are taking an L because you couldn't get Sarah Nurse on the show, right? So,
well, that's on Greg. That's on Greg.
That's
fine.
One, but you know what? Look, nobody's perfect. Obviously, I'll take plenty of L's. I thought Canadian division. I thought Montreal would contend for top spot, probably be second or third at worst. They don't look good, so that's an L for me.
Agreed. And yet Montreal has the makeup of a team that, and I guess we saw it last week against Edmonton, that if they get it together with a different style in the playoffs that is generally accepted, they actually might cause some teams some trouble if they get healthy, couldn't they?
Well, I could see it. Because obviously I was pretty high on the roster when I thought they could, you know, be second place team, maybe first. Things go well for them. They started the year so well. It looked like, yeah, bang on, got it right, great. Everything kind of fell apart. So, I don't know. I really don't know what to make of that team. Now they just don't look very good. They have kind of, you know, glimmers here and there. But I think with them, it's a pretty simple formula. Is you take away their speed through the neutral zone, their ability to counterattack, and force them to get into the offensive zone and try to figure out a way to score. Because I honestly don't remember the last time I saw that team make a creative play to get the puck, you know, into a dangerous area in the offensive zone. It's just work it around the outside, shoot it, look for tips, look for rebounds. So it seems like it's, you know, not a difficult recipe to try to figure out how to beat them. And I think teams have been doing that lately. For the most part, Calgary did a really good job of it.
Yeah, they did. No event hockey between those two teams. And we kind of saw no event hockey between the Canucks and Senators, who will go head-to-head this afternoon in Ottawa as well. We were talking about the Canadian division, which is not as good as people thought it was going to be, certainly at the top end. And yet the bottom of the Canadian division feels better than the bottom of other divisions in the National Hockey League. What do you make of what has been the North this year?
Yeah, well, I think that's a good point you guys bring up. The North, well, you know, Toronto's obviously the top team, I think, not only just by points and the fact that they're in first place, but they've got the most talent and have been the best team. So it's pretty clear. Edmonton has surprised me a little bit. I'll take another L. I didn't think Mike Smith had this in him to do what he's been doing this year. I thought their goaltending was really going to hold them back, and he's been phenomenal. But even like if you go and look at goalies his age in the history of the league and how they've performed, it's pretty special what he's doing this season. So I think that's just a good fit there in a lot of ways. Like he's stopping the puck, which is the most important thing, but the way that that team wants to play and the way that he can help start breakouts and get pucks to their defensemen and up the ice, that's a good fit for him there with that decor and with the way Edmonton wants to play. So that's all worked out pretty well. Then, you know, Winnipeg is their top nine to me is as good as any team's top nine in the league. And defensively, they give up a ton of chances and they got a great goalie. And I've always said, and it's probably pretty obvious, but it's like, if Connor Hellebuck drops off for pockets of time, this team's really going to struggle. And the argument I would get back is, well, he doesn't drop off. He's one of the best goalies in the league. Fair enough. Well, he has dropped off a little bit here. They've lost four in a row. So that's still a, you know, what if team to me. And then, yeah, Montreal inconsistent. Calgary, you know, they fight just to 100. Even, you know, before the coaching change, Vancouver, man, we get into lots of stuff with that season that they've had. And then Ottawa, I give full marks to DJ Smith and Ottawa. They've really come on and played well. If you kind of take away the disastrous start to the season they had, they've been a pretty good hockey team since then. They forecheck well. They work hard. They've got great young players. So, you know, as far as a bottom team goes, they're not bad.
Mike, looking at the North Division, you know, Toronto has kind of solidified its spot at the top of the division, and then Edmonton and Winnipeg are right there fighting for the second overall spot. And of those two teams, the Oilers and the Jets, which do you think would present more of a threat to Toronto should there be a meeting between those two teams in the playoffs?
Good question. I think Winnipeg, and it's not to me like there's one obvious answer. So it could be a little bit of either, but I would say Winnipeg again, just because I think if Connor Hellebuck is playing at the level that we're used to seeing him play at, that's a distinct goaltending advantage. I don't know what's going on with Toronto's goaltending, right? Like if Freddie comes back, who knows what we see from him? He's been below average the last 2 years. It's not like it's like, oh, once Freddie gets back, it's all good because he's the starter. He has not been very good. And Jack Campbell had the great stretch. He's cooled off a little bit. David Riddick's not going to win you a playoff series, most likely. And I know Toronto had, you know, last week a couple wins against the Jets, but I just think there's so much firepower in Winnipeg's top six, top nine even. Their third line's great. I think they're deeper at the forward position. I think they can basically match Toronto in the top six. And then that goaltending advantage to me is pretty significant. So that's matchup wise, I guess I'd lean towards Winnipeg a little bit more. And I know, you know, Edmonton had that stretch in the middle of the season where Toronto really shut McDavid and Draisaitl down. And you could look at that as well as potentially part of any kind of matchup evaluation. But I don't know. You look at the way Leon and Connor are going these days. I don't think anybody's stopping those guys.
And you mentioned Connor McDavid there, Mike, and, you know, he's been the talk of the hockey world really this week for what he's been doing, the scoring rate he's at right now. You had a great kind of deep dive at sportsnet.ca this week into Connor McDavid's season and just some of the underlying statistics which are allowing him to put up this production. When you were putting that together and digging through all the numbers, what kind of jumped out most to you about this incredible year that McDavid is having?
What jumped out most to me was not, you know, hey, he's leading in this thing or he's leading in that thing, because he usually is, but he's now leading in these key areas more than he ever has. Like the lead has gotten so big over everybody else and over his own past performance, which is like one of the things I talked about. It's kind of the way to evaluate him now, I think, is not, oh yeah, but how does he fare against? Well, he blows them out of the water. So how does he fare against what he's done in years past? How does he fare against the Hall of Famers of the past? Like, he's averaging 1.76 points per game. And the last guy to average more was Mario Lemieux in 2001, 1.77. Mario hadn't played in 3 years. He came out of retirement halfway through the year and then just went on an absolute tear and reminded everyone he's still the best player in the world. Like that's a separate story, but just an unbelievable one. But for McDavid, you know, things I look at, key offensive metrics. How much do you have the puck in the offensive zone? How many scoring chances are you generating? How many chances are you generating for your teammates with the passes that you're making? Your puck moving, getting it out of your end, getting it into the offensive zone. He's at the top of the board in all of these things. And the lead is huge. So, you know, rush chances, he had, I think, 74 right now off the top of my head. The next guy's 56. He scored more rush goals than anybody. Obviously, that doesn't surprise anyone. His puck possession numbers, though, in the offensive zone, he's at a minute 18 per game, which is, you know, his previous career high was about 10 seconds less. Might not sound like a ton. It makes a big difference. And he's passing pucks into the slot to his teammates more than four times a game, which is more than anybody by far. It's more than anybody since he came into the league. So you might not think of him as this great, you know, playmaker necessarily because he's so good everywhere else. You could argue he's the best playmaker in the league, which is why he's going to average more assists time in his career. That's what stands out to me, is that he's just blowing everything else out of the water in areas that he was already the best in.
Yeah, he certainly is, and it's a really good piece at sportsnet.ca. We encourage everyone to read it. Mike, I know you've got a really busy day. We appreciate you making time. We'll do this again soon. Safety and health to you and yours.
All right, guys, you as well. Thanks. I appreciate you having me on.
Thank you. That is Mike Kelly of the NHL Network. The numbers are off the charts, and it's just even the way he looks on the ice right now, Jamie. And we end on that thought with Connor McDavid. I don't know where the extra motivation came from in the offseason. Like, the greats go and find it somewhere. I don't know if somebody thought that the Oilers were going to fall back down to earth, hand up right here, or if it was just on a personal level that McDavid felt he had something to prove. But he looks like he's just got something that's driving him this year in a way that it hasn't in previous seasons, as good as he's been.
And I thought Mike made a few really interesting points there about McDavid. You know, first of all, with the idea that he's kind of at the level where we can only compare him to himself and what he's done in the past, right? Like, that's the only competition he has in some senses around the league right now. And the other one I thought was really interesting. No, when we talk about best passers, best playmakers in the NHL, we don't really bring Connor McDavid up in that conversation, but he's perennially among the league leaders in assists. And it's just, that's always so interesting when there's a player who's so great at so many things that something like Connor McDavid's playmaking can almost just fly completely under the radar because there's so much else to talk about with him. That's always fascinating, and a mark that you're witnessing something truly special from a player. And, you know, to your point about motivation and where Connor McDavid goes searching for that, maybe Leon Draisaitl taking home the Art Ross put him in a different headspace, right? And said, hey, my own teammate had more points than me last year. I got to go out and do something about that.
It's wild. I was made aware of a stat last night by a very established broadcaster in this industry who works for the other side. The Oilers, in terms of shots, do you know what they are this year with Connor McDavid on the ice?
Something, I think I've seen, I might have seen the scoring chance one or version of this or something, but it's a lot. They're plus a big number.
Yeah, it's plus 83. You know what they are with him off the ice?
Like minus 180 or something like that.
Yes, minus 183. Yeah. What a wild swing. What a wild, wild swing. And the biggest question now isn't, okay, does he win a unanimous Hart Trophy? Because he won't, because somebody will vote for somebody else. That's just the way it works in voting circles in the National Hockey. Like, he should win this unanimously. It feels like the NFL MVP vote this year to a certain extent. Like, okay, we had the Mahomes conversation. We still think he's the best quarterback. And Russell Wilson was the guy we're all chasing at the start of the year. But, like, Aaron Rodgers pretty clearly established it was his award. It was his year. We don't have a lot left to talk about. It kind of feels like the Hart Trophy race this year to me, doesn't it?
I would say McDavid has stretched his lead to a greater degree than Rodgers did at any point last year. And that's not to take anything away from Rodgers. Like, he was the deserving MVP, the clear-cut MVP, I think. But it's even more undeniable in the case of Connor McDavid for me.
Yeah, it just feels like the conversation isn't one worth having. You know,
no,
like in the NFL,
not.
Like, okay, like, hey, We have sports talk radio shows. We're supposed to find debates, find a reason to argue for our Tammy Panarin. I can't. I'm sorry. Like, the volume of evidence is just too overwhelming. So here becomes the question, because the one thing McDavid has not had is playoff success, and his teams have rarely been to the playoffs. It's only happened once. It's going to happen a second time this year. How much do they let go in the playoffs? How is the game called? And how does McDavid adapt? That's really what it comes down to, that the litmus test for what kind of year this ends up being for him, isn't it?
It is. He's at that stage in his career, and certainly with this regular season, where he's going to start to be judged by team success in the playoffs, fairly or not. And certainly just at an individual level, I think it's going to be important for him not to match the rate that he's scoring at in the regular season. That's not realistic, but to continue to be a guy who's taken over games, right? A guy who is single-handedly scoring goals, single-handedly creating chances at an absurd rate.
I'm interested to see how much hype there is for the playoffs in markets that aren't going to have teams in the playoffs, in Calgary and Vancouver, because we've all been waiting for this since we knew it was going to be an all-Canadian division. Oh, it's going to be Canada on Canada playoffs, and there's going to be a team in the Final Four. Without the Canucks there, without the Flames there, I'm interested to see how much investment there is and what people truly are invested in, because we kind of know the matchups. If it's not Toronto, Montreal, and Edmonton, Winnipeg, it will be a complete shock at this point.
It will complete be a surprise. Shock. Yeah.
Like somebody has to fall down somewhere for that not to happen.
Somebody has to really screw up. Let's put it that way. Somebody has to really, really screw up.
And in a couple of weeks, I guess it's 3 weeks as of today, if the Canucks and Flames play out the entirety of their schedule, I still think that's up in the air. Maybe I'm a little naive because of broadcast revenues and games that need to be aired and sponsorship deals that need to be honored. I still think that is TBD to me with those last couple of games of the season. Hey, guys, how about you're both good with 54 and we all move on? Where are you at on that?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think, you know, are you really going to delay the North Division playoffs for a little bit to let these two teams play meaningless games against each other? Or, I mean, even weirder would be having the divisional playoffs happening while the Canucks and the Flames play against each other. Like, both options just seems pretty bizarre. I mean, I don't know. Maybe the playoff teams wouldn't mind it. They get a little bit of a rest before they have to suit up. But it just seems like you want to roll right in from the end of the regular season into the playoffs, and having this weird little interruption in Canada to watch the Flames and the Canucks play games that nobody really cares about, that the players aren't going to be that invested in. It doesn't seem to make a ton of sense to me. I get it. You want to move those games, but you know, we're also talking about a couple games here or there, right? I don't see how it could have that big an impact on the revenues for the league as a whole. I don't know. Again, maybe I'm naive. Maybe they are absolutely dead set to getting those games in no matter what. But if they do play them, it's going to feel pretty strange either way.
Leaf hater Steve texts in immediately. The last games are going to be needed. That's how we slip in. He is a Vancouver Canucks fan. Well, Leaf hater Steve, you're going to need something this week in volume. You're going to need wins. Maybe that starts today against the Ottawa Senators. We'll get into it more in notes and quotes. I can tell you that Thatcher Demko, I told you earlier in the show that he was going to dress and start one of the two games. He's going to start tonight. So that'll be seen as very good news for Canucks fans that he's healthy enough, ready to go after missing the game and not even be able to dress as a backup on Monday. So Thatcher Demko will start in that game. But look, I've used it before. I'll use it again. I'll continue to hammer this. You need 3 wins minimum to generate any type of, oh, you know what? Maybe it's possible. And you need 1 loss for it to all feel like it slipped away. I don't know that there's ever been a better example of what I've been talking about than the 4 hours in which Calgary and Vancouver both played on Monday afternoon, Jamie. Like,
oh yeah,
it was over before it even started. I know those games went down to the wire. They were one goal games, but all of the talk of, hey, is this a playoff race? Is it not? Like, it was done in 4 hours because the teams were playing at the exact same time and it was early in the day.
Yeah, and the exact wrong results if you were rooting for a playoff race, right? Like, that's exactly what you did not want to happen. And the other thing is, I mean, just from a kind of subjective standpoint, like, neither the Flames or the Canucks filled you with a lot of confidence in those performances. And it's very understandable, certainly in the case of the Canucks. I know a lot of people are cutting them slack for their performances on the ice. I get it, given what they've gone through. But you didn't look at either of those teams and feel, at least on that night, oh, they're knocking on the door of a playoff race here. They've got it right now.
Going to feel like the Canucks are playing every day. It's going to seem like eons between games for the Calgary Flames as they play out the stretch. Calgary back tomorrow against the Oilers, who are in action tonight. We'll get to that on notes and quotes. We do have to give our final clue. Most of our listeners know who the player in question is, Jamie, but our final clue for the Upper Deck starter kit comes your way. Now, here's what you can win if you qualify. So if you haven't texted in already, you can still get a late entry in here, and there's a random selection with all of the qualified participants. 650-650, 960-960. We're giving away an Upper Deck starter kit in each market. You get the trading card binder, 3 packs of Upper Deck Series 1, an exclusive sophomore sensations card, 1 poster, 1 trading card collector's guide. What is the final clue here, Jamie?
Well, the final clue, and I think this is going to help answer it for pretty much everybody. If you're a fan of the NHL, he is a member of the Perfection Line.
He plays on the Perfection Line in Boston. He wears number 63. He has scored the most goals in April of any player in the National Hockey League, and he's a 2-time World Junior gold medalist. Most of you already have the answer. I know you don't like the answer, but that is your answer. He's a really good hockey player. I do think that he is changed the tone of his game a lot in the last couple of years. He still has that part of his DNA, Jamie, where at any one moment he could cross the line, he could do something that has helped him build the reputation that causes fans around the continent, but specifically in Vancouver, to despise him. But for the most part, he's scrubbed that out of his game in the last 2 years.
He has. I don't think it's enough for a lot of fans. The thing is, he's taken it out of his game, but it's not as if he's atoned for it in the past necessarily, right? Like, he hasn't done a complete reversal of his personality. He's just learned to manage it a little bit more. So it's still very easy, very, very easy to hate Brad Marchand, I find.
So if he's scoring goals for Canada at the Olympics next year, are people going to cheer, or are they begrudgingly going to say...
They're
going to
cheer. Yeah. They're going to cheer.
Yeah. And again, I don't want to give him too much credit, but we talk about this all the time. Hey, people's attitudes need to change. And we talk about it with bigger issues than whether or not you like a hockey player and whether or not a guy licks people on the ice or does dirty things on the ice every once in a while. However, if we're going to ask people to change and say, get that out of your game, you're a better player than that, you can't be doing that crap if you're going to be in the Hart Trophy conversation every couple of years, we got to give them a little bit of credit when they do.
It just seems like, and maybe this is splitting hairs, and maybe this is because I'm a homer or whatever, but like, there's two reasons you can change. You know what I mean? One is you have like genuine personal growth and you're like, I shouldn't be doing that. And the other is, you know, you're doing it strictly for personal gain or strictly because the team has told you not to do it. And you're just trying to fly under the radar and not get punished again. Right. And again, maybe I'm being completely unfair, but I don't think, like, I don't know if Brad Marchand looks back at his past behavior and was like, and thinks, man, that was really silly. What was I doing? I think he's like, I got to get the heat off me. I want to just keep scoring goals. So I'm not going to do that, even though it was good and I enjoyed doing it. And again, I don't know. Maybe that's unfair of me.
I don't know the guy. You don't know the guy. My read on it's a little bit different than yours, because I think he was asked by management at times to pull it back. The licking incident was the final straw. Like, cut that crap out. I know teammates, probably the likes of Patrice Bergeron, have said things like that in the past, Jamie, and he was defiant to the end. Like, no, I'm not changing. And he was backed up by guys like Sean Thornton, who would say for the first number of years in his career, go ahead, man. I will take care of any receipts that people want to keep on you. I will help. Like, he was an enabler to a certain degree, in my opinion, of the way that went down in Boston. Like, this is going to be the style of our team. You want to cross the line, don't worry. I'm here to clean up some of it for you. I think there were guys on that roster that would do it. My read on it, and maybe I am too idealistic, my read on it is that things changed when he started to have a young family and when he had his daughter. I think that's when things changed a little bit. And I think that's when that offseason came around and looked at the fact that he was going to have to set an example as a father. And though she's far too young to view what he does on the ice and have any cognizant knowledge of it, I do think that changes a person.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that's an interesting way of looking at it. And again, look, as I was saying, maybe I'm just being completely unfair to him here. And I don't know him. I don't know the intricacies and the inner workings of how he came to that decision. So I should allow for the possibility that it's closer to what you're describing.
Keep those texts coming in. Virtually everybody who has a phone and the numbers has qualified. We will let you know who wins the random draw and wins an Upper Deck starter kit in each market today. Notes and quotes. There's 7 games on ice, a bunch of them meaningful. One more meaningful than we thought it was going to be. We'll get to them next on Rintoul and Sermon with Jamie Dodd. Started with Vladdy. We touched on the NFL draft and a lot of hockey of late. And we'll dive into more hockey here in just 1 second. Scott Rintoul, Jamie Dodd. I don't know if you saw the note come down during the course of the break, Jamie. Just saw it flash across my screen on my phone. The Atlanta Braves are going to be the first team in the Big Four of North America to welcome fans back full-time, full capacity at their stadium should they choose to fill it in that venue.
Very interesting. And, you know, I will say, like, I understand that there will be people who say it's moving too fast and it's still unsafe. And I am sympathetic to that argument, although I'm not an expert by any means. But there is also part of me that sees that and is excited, right? Because hopefully in the not too distant future, that will be the case in a safe, healthy manner across North America.
I can only imagine what these playoffs would end up looking like in the Canadian division if that were the case.
Oh,
it would be incredible. It would be incredible. And I do think whether it's the fall, when And we're all hopeful it's going to be the fall when fans are allowed back in the building. Whenever it happens, Jamie, like that first game back for people when you can be in a full arena and the and people feel comfortable enough with where we're at with COVID-19 and vaccination and all of that stuff and just being around other people again, man, that's going to be a heartwarming moment. And it feels like it'll be that independent of whatever result comes down that night.
Yeah, it definitely will. And it's funny with the Canadian division specifically, it's always been that kind of catch-22 because it's, you know, oh man, imagine if you could have that with fans in the stands. But we've also known, you know, the only reason it's happening is because we can't have fans in the stands right now. And it is too bad. It doesn't look like we're going to get there for the playoffs because having an all-Canadian, you know, second-round playoff series after playing against each other all regular season with fans in the stands would have been just incredible.
Well, just think of what it was like last summer and into September. Think of what that was like. And it does seem like so long ago because restrictions have changed and second wave, third wave, vaccination rollout, all of those things have happened in our lives and not quickly enough in terms of the last one. But remember last summer when we were allowed in these respective provinces to get together with people outside and you could sit in somebody's backyard and the barbecue was going and you were watching a playoff game? Like, that'll be one of my sporting memories from the pandemic when I look back 5-10 years from now.
Absolutely. It's a really good point. And, you know, you at that time, you might have thought, hey, in, you know, 8 months when the playoffs are rolling around for the next season, maybe we'll be able to have some fans in the building. It's too bad it hasn't worked out like that.
Yeah, it is. And not even having fans in the backyard the way we were. And it's
nope,
a little different
right
because
now
there's no playoff series for the Calgary Flames that's coming. There's no playoff series for the Vancouver Canucks that's coming. And as I have said over a month ago, if either of those things happen, I am happy to stand up and say, I'll take the L this week. Boy, I was wrong. I was on team math in this one, and I was proven wrong by just one of those crazy runs that happened. I think most people are resigned to that fate. And as we get to notes and quotes here, Jamie, as we do in the final segment of the show every single day, outside of Vancouver and Ottawa, which we'll play in the final game, we'll get to that in a second, we got a couple of playoff preview games coming our way tonight.
Yeah, we sure do. And that's very, very exciting. Toronto-Montreal is the one that stands out on this side of the border, right? As we said earlier in the show, it seems like we know the playoff matchups. You know, Edmonton and Winnipeg might flip-flop which team is technically the higher seed there, but there's a very, very good chance that we're going to get Toronto-Montreal and Edmonton-Winnipeg in the first round.
I do see a commonality between those two series, which I'll get to in a second, but let's start with Vancouver and Ottawa. It's the first game of the day. It's a really early start. That game, puck is going to drop in just a couple hours' time in Ottawa today. It's the ninth and final meeting between the Canucks and Sens. Good news, bad news for the Vancouver Canucks. Good news, 6-2 against the Ottawa Senators this year. Bad news, Sens have won 2 of the last 3.
Yeah, and those are the big ones, right? I mean, obviously every game counts, 2 points count, whether it's at the beginning of the season or the end of the season, but they really, really needed to pad that advantage over the Senators over the last week or so here. They haven't been able to do it, and they had those 4 games against the Senators on the schedule. Fans started dreaming about it, but you know, even if they win tonight, they go 2-2 in those 4 games. That's just not good enough.
It's going to be a weird autopsy, a component of the autopsy anyway, in both Calgary and Vancouver. Like, Calgary's going to look back at its season like a couple months from now and go, can you believe the Senators did that to the Calgary Flames? And Vancouver is going to say, yeah, they weren't that bad. Yeah, they played tough, but we were able to get results. And they're going to feel opposite in both markets about Montreal. No, Montreal wasn't that hard. I mean, they don't score any goals. We did just fine against them, and Vancouver's going to say, man, I wish we'd known that sooner because they scored a lot of goals against us.
I was going to say, yeah, they score 5 goals a game. What are you talking about? 6 goals a game when they're playing against us. And the funny thing from the Canucks' perspective is it's not even just Montreal. It's almost even smaller than that. It's like one player, right? Like, imagine Canucks fans will be sitting there saying, imagine if we had kept Tyler Toffoli, kept him away from Montreal, who finished above us in the standings, and just Toffoli just killed the Canucks every time he played them. Like, it might just come down to that one player who would have been enough to flip the playoff race in this division.
Very true. 25 goals in the season for Toffoli. He scored in 4 straight games. More on him in just a second. Thatcher Demko starts tonight for the Vancouver Canucks. Welcome news in that he was injured in Monday's pregame. Nobody knew how long. Canucks at the time said, hey, it's a minor injury. There were those who went, yeah, you said that about Elias Pettersson at one point in time. What does this really mean? Demko starts. He lost 2-0 to the Senators last Thursday. That's the only start we've seen him in since the COVID hiatus for the Vancouver Canucks.
Huge news that he's able to go tonight, that they feel comfortable starting him tonight. You know, there's been a lot of chatter in Vancouver about how very, very difficult their goalie situation would be if Demko wasn't able to play at some point this week. Of course, having just sent Mikey DiPietro down to Utica, not available for a recall on that short of a turnaround. The next guy up is Archer Silos, who's I think has played one professional game in his career at this point. So they were very, very thin behind Braden Holtby, and huge news that they're going to be able to get Demko back in the crease tonight.
Not as huge news, not on a personal level, but just on a broader scope level. Zach MacEwen back into the lineup for the Vancouver Canucks. Don't expect to see Jimmy VC. That is a lottery ticket the Vancouver Canucks took out of Toronto. Hasn't been much after they've scratched it, has there?
No, it's and you know, to be fair, when Jimmy VC was picked up by the Canucks, you know, we got all the people who follow the Leafs on the station. Okay, what should they expect? What can Jimmy VC bring to the team? And the answer was a lot of what's happened, right? No, not much. It didn't make much of an impact in Toronto. Probably not going to make much of an impact in Vancouver. That's exactly how it's played out.
All right, so that is the first game of the day, the first of the three Canadian matchups. You mentioned Toronto and Montreal, likely playoff preview, as we've said a number of times, without a number of key players for the home side. No Jonathan Drouin for the Habs. We mentioned that earlier in the show today. It is a personal leave of absence for personal reasons. He and the Canadians have asked for privacy. So I think you and I are in agreement here. Give him privacy. They've placed him on LTIR. No idea when Jonathan Drouin will rejoin this lineup. No Brendan Gallagher again. Apparently the news on him is good, though, Jamie. The cast is off. He's skating once again, but we're not seeing Brendan Gallagher before the playoffs, are we?
No, 100% we are not. But, I mean, if you're hoping, one, for Montreal to challenge the Leafs in the first round, but also just generally for a competitive playoff environment here in the North Division, it's going to be fantastic when Brendan Gallagher hits the ice again. Fun player to watch and just a huge part of that team.
No Carey Price. Game time decisions of sorts. Thomas Tatar, Paul Byron, their status yet to be determined. So this could be a patchwork lineup. We know Cole Caulfield's going to be a part of it again for Canadiens fans. That's very exciting. I thought he played well the other night in Montreal. Not one of those, holy crap, do you remember Cole Caulfield's debut games? But he had a team-high 4 shots. He didn't look out of place. In fact, they had him on the ice, Jamie, in the final 5 minutes of that hockey game with a 2-1 lead. Not taking the final shifts and not trying to close out the game, but the fact that they would trust a rookie in his first game in that situation, in such an important circumstance for the Habs, it does tell you how high they are on him.
Yeah, that's interesting, especially for a guy who, you know, he's going to make his living in the NHL as an offensive player, as a scorer, right? And it shows you that, you know, they see more than that in him, right? They see a guy that they can trust out in those situations. And that's going to be the way that he ends up getting more minutes. And, you know, for Habs fans and for the Habs themselves, hopefully that leads to him showing off that scoring touch more often too.
Because there's so much disparity between these two teams in the standings, it doesn't mean much for Toronto. It means more for Montreal in terms of solidifying their case as the fourth and final playoff team. But yeah, this is possibly a playoff preview. Here's what Sheldon Keefe had to say about that and the thought of this being something we're going to see in 3 weeks' time.
I'm only focused on tonight's game here, and I know we need to be a whole lot better than the last time we were in this building. So we got to take it one day, one game at a time here. Let's not get carried away. Let's just focus on the remaining games here, and it starts with this one tonight.
Okay. It's a lot of coach speak. Toronto, Jamie, we talked a lot after last week. Oh, where's their goaltending situation? It's settled down, obviously. Back-to-back wins over Winnipeg is going to do that. Toronto going to play back-to-back. Vancouver playing there tomorrow. Toronto and Montreal tonight. This is more about ironing out wrinkles in the Leafs game and trying to stay healthy in advance of the playoffs.
Yeah, and you know, you say their goaltending situation has calmed down a little bit, and I guess you're right. The thing is, and I know we had Mike Kelly on earlier, and he kind of touched on this as well, I don't think anything's going to happen in the final 8 games of the season that's going to make you really, really confident in the Leafs' goaltending situation going into the playoffs. Like, count me as not a doubter of Jack Campbell, but you know, we've even seen it already this year. He had that incredible hot streak to start, and then he cooled off a little bit. Now he's playing well, but I don't think you can count on that game-to-game consistency from Jack Campbell. And, you know, as you heard Mike Kelly say again, Frederik Andersen has been kind of average, below-average goalie for the last couple of seasons. So it's, I'm sure, obviously, look, obviously you want better goaltending in these final eight games if you're the Leafs going into the playoffs, but it really doesn't feel like, even if Jack Campbell has another great stretch to finish the season, you're still going to be very, very concerned about the goaltending if you're a Leafs fan when the playoffs start.
Well, it's the first thing you're going to point to. I agree with that wholeheartedly. It's just not at the fever pitch we were talking about it last week. Like, man, can they get a save? Because if you can get average goaltending, you should be doing just fine with this team, but they're not getting that right now. And David Riddick's letting in goals that should be stopped in minor hockey in the third period. I know that's a little bit of hyperbole, but that's the way it was being talked about in Toronto. Here's what I think is interesting about this tonight. No matter what happens, Jamie, it's not a true indicator of Montreal what that roster is going to look like. And so there's always going to be some degree of mystery about how the Habs look and how healthy they are. Is Carey Price ready to go? Does he get to play games before the end of the season? Brendan Gallagher, we know what he brings to the table. But Tatar, Byron, is Jonathan Drouin going to be a part of it? There's going to be a freshness about the Montreal Canadiens as they enter the playoff and a mystery about them, and that makes it a little more intriguing in what is going to be the first matchup between these two teams, so long as it plays out, since 1979 in the postseason.
Wow, that's incredible. Huh? And I mean, just thinking of it strictly from kind of a mercenary perspective, from the league's perspective and from the television partners, which of course we work for one of them, but kind of a dream scenario when you drew up this North division, right? And you'd like the Habs to be playing better, so it feels like more of a contest, but to get that playoff matchup in round one, that's going to be cool. I know we're all jaded out here out west about who cares about the Leafs or the Habs, but it is going to be legitimately cool to see those teams match up in a playoff series.
Edmonton, Winnipeg likely to go head-to-head as well. Who has home ice advantage? That'll be determined over the next number of games. Interesting that Connor Hellebuyck is not getting the night off for the Winnipeg Jets. He got pulled last game. He's been pulled twice in the last three. He's going to get the start. Mike McKenna mentioned this yesterday, Jamie, that you still got to go with Connor Hellebuyck down the stretch. You got to reinforce his confidence as opposed to giving him some nights off.
You absolutely have to. You have to get him in a groove. That's a different situation for me, obviously, than the one in Toronto, right, where what he does down the stretch really does matter for how confident you feel, because Winnipeg, to me, needs their goaltending to be excellent to have a chance to go on a deep run in the playoffs. Obviously, they've got some other really nice pieces there, but Hellebuyck is the difference maker, and he has the upside where he can single-handedly win them a playoff series, but they rely on their goaltending more than any of the other top teams in the division.
Agreed. And it will bring in focus the defense and what Connor McDavid has done to that team. What does he have, 19 points in 8 games so far against the Winnipeg Jets as he looks to add to his league-leading total tonight? Winnipeg, this is the commonality I see between the two series. Because Adam Lowry's not there, because Nick Ehlers isn't there, and I guess because Connor Hellebuyck hasn't been in the groove, it doesn't feel like a true indication of what Winnipeg is going to be able to bring to the table in the postseason. Because the strategy is going to be somewhat simple, isn't it? If you're the Winnipeg Jets and you're playing the Oilers, we are going to physically wear Connor McDavid down.
You're going to try, and it's kind of easier said than done, like at least through the run of play. But between the whistles, right? You know, like after the whistle, maybe you're able to do it a little bit, but it's easier said than, oh, just stick with him and physically harass him. Well, he's the best skater in the league, right? Like, there's going to be moments where you can do that, but if it was that easy, teams would do it a little bit more in the regular season, too. I know it's a different game in the playoffs, but that's going to be the goal, but it's much easier said than done.
Sure, and Connor McDavid is the great advantage that Edmonton has over any team in the National Hockey League, backed up pretty quickly by Leon Draisaitl. And the advantage Winnipeg has, in theory, the depth of that forward group, and Adam Lowry is such a big piece of that. Such a big piece. You want to talk about a physical guy? Okay, he's not keeping up with McDavid's wheels. But think about the toll that that line can take, and it's the type of line that projects very well to a playoff scenario.
And that could be the difference in a series there, right? If that line can do at least an adequate job against Edmonton's big guns, because they're going to rely on that line in a big way to play those tough minutes against the star players on the other side.
Four other games in the National Hockey League tonight. Of note, Vegas and Colorado going head-to-head. I believe this is the final time they will meet this season. Colorado, one game in hand, 4 points back of Vegas, and it is a carrot to grab top spot in that West division. Minnesota and St. Louis are going to play tonight. Those are likely your other two playoff teams. Minnesota's there for sure, already clinched. St. Louis, the probable team to get there. You win that division, Jamie. You don't have to play the Minnesota Wild in round number one. And while we all think that Vegas and Colorado are the best two teams and that they're on a collision course for the playoffs, avoiding Minnesota would certainly help. I know the Blues have been better of late, and I know they got playoff pedigree. It feels like apples and oranges, though.
It does. Minnesota has been much better. Minnesota probably scares you more just what Kaprizov has done, right? They finally have that game-breaking talent that can really frighten you if you're the other team. So it is a big deal. And I think it also just matters. Like, you want the mental edge going in if there is going to be a playoff meeting between Vegas and Colorado, right? So there's got to be a bit of bragging rights on the line there as well, I would think.
Yeah, and St. Louis, obviously a much more important game in that matchup with Minnesota tonight. The Wild have been really good. It's still surprising to look at the standings with as consistent as Minnesota has been this year. And look, we go back 6-8 weeks talking to Mike McKenna about this every Tuesday and him saying, like, Minnesota's a legit deal. I know they're not just a good start. They are going to be a team to be reckoned with to a certain extent in this division. It's still weird to look at the West and see Minnesota 1 point back of Colorado.
It's bizarre. It really is. And, you know, even just to look at it and see, like, their goal differential is really good, right? They have, like, a plus 28 goal differential. St. Louis is a minus 8, right? And you think it's so bizarre. Like, oh, St. Louis won the Stanley Cup not that long ago. Big physical playoff team. But yeah, there's just no doubt you would way, way rather play the Blues right now than Minnesota.
You mentioned goal differential. I know we didn't have a chance to get into it with Mike Kelly when we had him on. Did you see that stat that he pointed out? That the last team to miss the playoffs with a better goal differential than the New York Rangers are the 1970 Montreal Canadiens.
Wow.
New York is plus 35 in margin this year, probably because of those games Zibanejad has had against the Philadelphia Flyers, where he just lights them up. Yeah, when they score like 9 goals a game against the Flyers, that certainly helps. But that's a pretty wild stat if that number holds up and it's in and around that area. Like, if you're a positive goal differential, your chances of getting into the playoffs are extremely good in the National Hockey League. That's your delineator between playoff teams and non-playoff teams. It's rare you miss with a plus. It's extremely rare that you miss with a plus like that, and you're right. Minnesota's is very good, plus 28 on the season.
And how about this, Scotty? Just going to the Rangers. It was rare to miss with a plus 35. I can only imagine how rare it is to miss when you have the best goal differential in your division, which New York currently does, and we all agree that that's the best division in hockey. They have the best goal differential, plus 35. Pittsburgh's next at plus 32 right now, and they could easily be on the inside out or on the outside looking in when the playoffs start.
Very good point. Last but certainly not least, two games that you probably wouldn't pay much attention to, and maybe you'll pay a little more attention to one now. Arizona, San Jose. I can hear the yawns already. Anaheim, Los Angeles. And you might have had the same yawns, except that Quinton Byfield is debuting tonight, Jamie.
Very exciting. We touched on it earlier. Number 2 overall pick. I know there's some people in the draft prospect community who thought he should have been the first overall pick, who thought he had the higher ceiling than Alexi Lafreniere, who ended up going first overall to the Rangers. And yeah, this is it's for the Kings. You're right. There's not a lot of stakes to this game, obviously, but really exciting to get the first look at NHL action for Quinton Byfield tonight.
Maybe Quinton Byfield will be the answer in tomorrow's Upper Deck starter kit giveaway, but maybe he won't. You just never know. I'm not sure people tuned in today and thought, you know who it's going to be? Brad Marchand. That was the correct answer. A lot of you knew it, and the two randomly selected winners are, in Calgary, Jordan, congratulations. Promotions team will be in correspondence with you. In Vancouver, Gurminder. Man, Jamie, like we say this every day, we're appreciative of the listeners getting in at 960, 960, and 650, 650. The response to this contest has been incredible.
Oh, yeah. It's been really, really good. It's a great prize, and trading cards are having such a comeback right now, Scotty, that people are really into it, and you know, we've had people, I text with the listeners when they win, and I've had a couple of people say, like, wow, this is so great. You know, my son is going to love this. He's really into trading cards. So it's a fantastic prize. I'm not surprised, and I'm excited to give a couple more away today and for the next couple of days here.
I said earlier in the show, Jamie, Like, you're going to look back on the pandemic and go, yeah, that's one of my great sporting memories. Like, the playoff run where people were watching games outside, barbecuing, great weather, not what we normally associate with Stanley Cup playoff hockey. I'm going to tell you one of the things I'll look back and say, how did I not find time to do that? Because we've had a lot of time on our hands, or so it seems. You and I are parents of young children, so maybe not as much time as yep. others. My hockey cards. Like, why have I not gone in, looked at my hockey cards, and just had a look at what's actually there instead of just leaving them sitting there in the box? Like, that'll be one where I go, oh, yeah, I didn't get to that. And maybe that's something that had I known I was going to be in my house for 13, 14 months, I would have done.
That would be great, like, social media content too, Scotty. You know, and I know you're always looking at ways to build your social media brand. But, you know, just pull out a random card and talk about the guy a little bit. That'd be great.
You want that to happen? We can make that happen.
Let's do it.
All right, if there's enough support from the listeners, we will make that happen, that I will just go into the box of hockey cards, pull out random card, and have a look. One of the things I used to love about those, I know people get all this information online, but I think people forget that. That's how you used to learn about players. Broadcasts weren't as prevalent. Certainly we didn't 100%. Have the internet. But you would get your trading cards every single year, and you would read these interesting facts or just learn stats about players around the league.
Oh, yeah. You would know what a player's career was. And, you know, we didn't have Baseball Reference or Hockey Reference that you could go look up and see what this guy did 5 years ago when he was playing for a different team. Like, unless you owned one of those, you know, sport almanacs, right? And you kept that current. You got a new one every year. You kind of needed your trading cards to tell you that.
You could write a song, a hit song, if you're the Tragically Hip, based off of a hockey card. That could actually happen. Jamie, great job, man. As I said earlier, the Shohei Ohtani. Shohei Ohtani of this show. You proved it again today. You produced the show. You were here on air. Awesome stuff. Thank you very much for jumping in.
My pleasure, man. Fun time as always.
That is Jamie Dodd. You will hear him again tomorrow, though we expect Karen Sermon to be back on the program tomorrow. Big ups to Greg Ballack back at Mission Control. We're going to send things over to the big show in Calgary. Flames back at practice today. Pat Steinberg will dig into that. Keep you apprised as to what is happening. Will Nault along there as well. In Vancouver, the pregame show. Yeah, it's ready to get going already. 2:30 puck drop Pacific time between the Ottawa Senators and the Vancouver Canucks. So the official pregame show gets going next on 650. We're all back tomorrow. We expect you to be here as well. Have yourselves a great Wednesday.